Oh yeah. Hello, welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way while adjusting the potentiometers on the soundboard.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication and the internet, and today, crashing.
That's right. And we're here in the room with Dave Foyt from PortlandEyes.com, amongst other. Are you known for other things? I'm sure you are, but
I have no idea.
Okay, easy enough. We'll say that you're from PortlandEyes.com then, and that'll be a good place to start.
Sure.
But yeah, you've got a story about a crash, so we'll get into that sometime after the news and all that. Thanks for joining us.
Of course.
Yeah. Which beer do you have there?
This is McTarnahan's Humbugger.
Yes. Yeah, we got that just not half an hour ago from the corner store.
Oh, yeah.
Not the usual corner store that I go to, but the other one.
The other corner store.
Yes.
That's one thing you have to appreciate about Portland is that you can go to like a 7-Eleven and have a whole wall of microbrews.
Totally, yeah. And it's not even that we have like, their selection wasn't all that great, but they do have microbrews and they have them in bottles and you can get it along with bags of Doritos and chicken sandwiches and that sort of thing. Yeah. Aaron, have you been, this is the Jiffy Mart on
yes.
Southeast 82nd Avenue.
I'm committed to
and
go
Bybee.
There every Sunday.
Every Sunday?
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's kind of a loose commitment. This is actually the first Sunday in a couple weeks, like the last two Sundays.
Oh, there we go.
But I've committed since he started serving coffee, which is the smoothest dollar coffee you can buy.
Yeah, and that's what, 16 ounces in your hand there?
16 ounces.
And for a dollar.
Yeah.
And it's like long bottom coffee?
Long bottom is the roasters, I guess, out of Hillsboro. Really smooth dollar coffee.
Yeah.
Since Steven, good friend of ours, started the whole coffee thing in his corner store, I decided I would help support it by
spending
a dollar.
Yeah.
Once a week.
No, that's a good idea. Well, congratulations then. You're well on your way. You're two coffees into becoming a loyal citizen.
That's right.
A loyal supporter of the business. I was sick. I've been sick for the past 24 hours or so, I think. Because you were here.
Yes.
We bicycled home from a show. We went to see David Bazan at Mississippi Studios. It was a great show.
Awesome show.
And I decided, hey, I'm going to have a couple of beers. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. And you hadn't been drinking much.
No, I'd kind lately. Of, not that I was not drinking, but I was just like, you know, kind of staving
you
just, it off.
Yeah.
Mostly for financial reasons. Also kind of as an experiment, just to see like, what's life like without as much beer in my life? Because ever since I turned 21, you know, it's like I've pretty much taken advantage of my legal right to have alcohol in my fridge and often in my mouth as much as possible. And yeah, so the kind of the end of that period was like the end of my school work year thing,
right?
Which ended on Friday. So that means I am basically I'm going to get fat and unshaven. and really drunk. I'm not gonna bathe.
No.
This is like I have 2 weeks off from work, and this is when I just kind of decide to, you know, do whatever is fun.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I hit the front end of that period of time.
That's right.
Yeah, you got me. You got me in my pleasant smelling stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of weeks, no one will want to talk to me or anything.
We're gonna be a dearth for guests. Here
seriously. Yeah. Up. Yeah. So now that everyone has an image of me unshaven and fat in their head, we'll move on.
Yeah, might be for the best.
I've got McTarnahan's Amber here,
right?
Portland's original amber ale, they say. I wonder if that's true. I wonder if there was an amber ale in Portland before McTarnahan's.
I somehow feel like maybe Weinhard's beat them out.
Right. Yeah. I guess that was and that wasn't necessarily in Portland because they're in Hood River, right? Or
Weinhard or
Weinhard's. Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure they probably have Portland operations.
Originally, I mean, Henry Weinhard was from Portland.
Oh, okay.
Know? I mean,
yeah.
He, I guess, when they first put in the Skidmore fountain, he jokingly suggested that they pipe beer from his brewery to fountain.
I love the idea. I think we should try that someday. I feel like there was a story. It was the whole thing with the bubblers. Bunsen bubblers?
Benson.
Benson, yeah. The guy who did those. The story allegedly is that the water fountains in downtown Portland were installed free of charge as a gift to the city of Portland from Mr. Benson, I think.
Simon, in fact.
Excuse me. With the stipulation that the city would pipe water to them, and that would be free for, like, all eternity. And I think at this point in history, the city has, like, the worst end of that deal, right? Like, they've been paying for the water for, like, hundreds of years now or something like that.
Right, like, what's it cost to install those? I mean, I'm sure it was expensive at the time.
Yeah, they're, like, brass, right, or something right. like that. Yeah. They're not, like, aluminum. They're expensive.
Yeah.
I guess I would see the Benson bubblers as, like, who's going to come and take them back? That's my question. Like, will his estate someday, like, right. if the city shuts them down?
We just can't afford this water anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So that's good times. I have to excuse me. I am still
You're still
sort
kind
of sick.
Recovering.
Yeah. I can feel it kind of like as I continue to speak. Right. So my apologies to anyone out there, but I'll be a bit sniffly. Oh, should we talk about some news?
Yeah, why not?
All right, sounds good. Oh, there it is.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal just as fast as we can into the night light. Pedal just as fast as the leg of the ladder. Your pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can.
All right. So, headlines. This first one comes from The Ricky Lake Show.
That's right.
Emily Finch talks about her multi-kid bot feet setup on national TV.
Yeah.
And Emily Fitz, why don't you give a little bit of background?
Emily Finch is, she's now, like, nationally famous. It kind of started as a thing here in town where, like, Jonathan Moss from Bike Portland wrote an article about her. And it just kind of spread from one thing to the next. I believe Reddit was responsible for getting her in front of lots of people's eyes.
I see.
That was kind of a like this groundswell campaign sort of thing. And then from there, eventually Ricky Lake said, hey, we should have her on the show. And so they just did that, yeah. And there was a viewing party, I think, a couple weeks ago at Velo Cult, I believe. Did you go to that, Dave?
Yeah.
Oh, what happened there?
Lots of noise and
nice
free drinks.
Yeah, free drinks?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Now I wish I'd gone.
I don't know who facilitated that, but
right.
It was nice.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, as long as the bottom line is taken care of, whoever drinks the beer is really irrelevant.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty cool. Because were they watching it live or was it a rebroadcast?
It was recorded, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But, yeah. Emily's great. I know her a little bit. And she's sort of crazy in all the best ways.
Yeah,
I mean,
for sure.
But she's just a really extremely nice person. I mean,
yeah. You would get that sense just from seeing the video, because I've never actually met her in person, and I think she's on my short list of people to get in and talk to someday about just kind of what she's up to. Mm-hmm. I think she was obviously so excited to be on TV. It was amazing. Like, it was like this meta experience of, like, you know, excitement upon excitement and all that.
You know, one thing I've picked up with her is just, like, she's very just out there, like, you see what's going on inside of her, you know?
Right. Like, she's not, like, hiding behind some sort of veil of secrecy.
Yeah.
Yeah, wearing emotions on her sleeve and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Her story is pretty fascinating, and I guess if we have her on, we'd get into that in more detail. But basically, it was, like, was it a bet with her dad?
Not really a bet. I think he just got her thinking about stuff and
right.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like the gravity of resource scarcity made her think, well, I need to figure out another way to get my family around.
Yeah.
So,
and eventually then kept doing it just because she really liked it.
Right. Yeah. And it's a pretty cool, great setup. I've seen several pictures and a little bit of video of, I think she was actually at, like, a critical mass challenge course or whatever. Going over like bumps and things.
Oh yeah, I think that was Feats of Parenthood at Clever Cycles.
Cool. Feats as in like
F-E-I. Feats as in the Dutch word for bicycle.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. We're proud of her and what she's doing. Proud of the national exposure, and hopefully, in our probably best case scenario, it wouldn't be that this would just be like some like look at her, she's so crazy, but like look at her, this is possible, you can do this too if you want to. So
right, and actually there are quite a few people, not necessarily with six kids, but quite a few people doing exactly what she's doing as well.
Right Yeah, so the more exposure this gets in mainstream media, I think the more normalized it will be, which will be better for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Like it's funny, it starts off on the Ricky Lake show, right, which is sort of already makes it a novelty.
Sure.
You know.
Well, and also the episode was Extreme Lifestyles, which is also kind of funny. But
yeah.
People still use that word as an adjective.
Huh? Extreme. Yeah.
Extreme.
With a capital X.
Right.
Which is funny because, you know, like for most of us, we're just like, what, she rides a bike. Okay, that's fine.
Right, yeah. Right. Like it's not it's not that, you know, I mean, she has more people on the bike than usual, but
right.
But it's like not super, super extreme.
Yeah.
My favorite part of the show was like the closing, like where the credits were rolling, where Emily was on the bike. I think it was a rented Bachfeets from somewhere in.
Flying Pigeon LA.
Okay.
Loaned her the Bachfeets for the day.
Yeah. And then they just loaded Ricky Lake into the bucket.
And she just took off.
Oh man, I should have seen this clip.
Yeah. No, that's pretty great. So, anyways, that's all that happened. That's been on TV and it's on the internet now. So we got a link to that on our website. Right. So.
Next, Bike Portland. Tom Labonte heads to Texas to teach cargo bike building.
Yeah, and awesome. I'm excited about this.
This is
because
Tom from Tom's Cargo Bike.
Tom from Tom's Cargo Bikes, who built my bike and many others. He's a smart guy. So the fact that, you know, he used to just kind of do this in his garage, and I assume he still does most of the things in his garage, but he's been apparently traveling and sharing some of this stuff. Like he went to Texas and said, hey, we're going to do a bicycle workshop. So there's a picture here you can see of bikes in progress that he was kind of helping people construct. Once the bike was done, Labonte said of this particular project, within minutes it was working, which is just great. I like the idea that this guy is going from place to place and saying, here's how you weld stuff and make it functional. So do you weld, Aaron?
I don't.
Okay. Have you ever wanted to?
I barely solder.
Soldering is a useful skill as well.
Yeah, it is. I'm not very good at it.
Yeah.
I've fantasized about like things like arc welding. That I think requires a bit more science and concentration than I'm willing to learn.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a disciplined skill, I'm sure. Just like anything else, it takes the time to learn how to do it and the materials. And yeah, Dave, do you weld? Yeah. No. Would you if you could?
I think I'm kind of in the same boat.
Like you're a fan of things that are welded.
Yes,
but not necessarily. Like you're not. It's not your first passion.
No.
Yeah.
I think in the meantime, like my housemates would appreciate if I didn't bring in more flammable materials into the house.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably all
acetylene and oxygen tanks hanging out in the same house with a 2-year-old.
Totally. Yeah, and she she's already probably getting her hands into many things already. Yes. So acetylene is one thing she doesn't need.
No.
Yeah, little Lucy
as
just kind
with of most of us
flailing the torch around. Yeah. There's also in this article from Bike Portland, there's a reference of One Less Truck, a documentary by Portland-based filmmaker Joe Beal. We got to put the word out here, too, because I've tried to get in touch with Joe Beal several times in several different methods. I think I sent him an email, which may have gone to his spam folder.
Oh.
And then I sent him a direct message on Twitter, which nobody like knows how to use Twitter. You know, I didn't. So anyways, anyone out there listening to my voice, if you know Joe and you can get us in touch, please do. I suppose probably when we have Ellie back in, I'll see if she can
direct connection
enlighten me into how to get in touch with Joe. But he was there doing gold sprints when we were
really?
Doing gold sprints at Velocult.
Wait, he wasn't the dude. No, it was someone else. Like there was some dude that was challenged by everybody and just was whomping.
I think that was Ellie Talheimer's
that's
partner.
Right.
That was I believe his name is also Joe. But
yes.
It's another Joe. I don't remember his last name.
Two Ellies, two Joes.
Right. He's a badass. He was very good. And as you say, he was whomping on everyone. So, yes, that's a man who knows how to ride a bike. Yeah.
Quite.
Dave, have you ever done gold sprints?
Nope. In fact, I don't even know what they are.
So the way it worked out at VeloCult for the Hop in the Saddle release party was that you and I, the gauntlet had been thrown for you and I, Aaron.
Right, right.
To where, yeah, basically they had two stationary bicycles. They were really poorly... They were in poor condition. They were,
to their admission, like they were ones that Lucy and Ellie pulled out of their garages.
Right,
that had
right.
Been just sitting around.
So they throw those on a trainer and take the front wheels off, and basically you've got like no resistance on a crappy bike.
Yeah.
Is how it was described to me. So I think it's
like
okay
one
to say
gear
so.
Too. Yeah.
Right, and one speed, and the idea was that you race against someone. There was like a progress bar from a computer that was somehow
right.
attached
it's like
to the
all
trainers.
Hooked up either like
it was
to
all
the,
electronic
to the treadmill or whatever it's running
yeah.
on or
yeah
yeah.
So we did this, and I think we were close. We were neck and neck.
We were not.
I think we were.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you for that, but we weren't.
Okay.
Yeah. You wailed on me.
All right. Well, we had a good time.
Yeah. No, it was fun. This wasn't on the air when we were talking about it with Ellie and Lucy.
Oh,
when
right.
they threw the gauntlet down for us.
Right, right.
And then you and I were like, well, I think you'll beat me because, you know, you bike way more than me. And you're in better shape. Like, this is you and me trash talking each other, right?
Trash talking ourselves to each other.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Like, no, I'm out of shape. No, I'm out of shape.
Right, right.
Kind of like that.
And then, but I had to admit later that evening, I think it was Lucy I was talking to, because she didn't get to see us run. She's like, oh, how'd you do? And I was like, oh, no, terrible. And I had to admit to her, like, so as we're sort of downplaying how well we're going to do, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, nah, I'll really take him down.
Yeah.
I'll really
yeah.
do this.
Just kind of the quiet confidence in the back of your mind.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Simple enough. So anyways, those are gold sprints, Dave. And I recommend if you're interested in some friendly competition sometime, it's a fun
it's
way
fun.
To do it.
Yeah, it's fun. Especially when you're surrounded by many people.
A drunken mob
yeah, I was
celebrated
gonna say,
the release
hopefully
of
inebriated.
A book. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that they were a drunken mob. They were certainly, everyone was happy and everyone was drinking.
No one was feeling pain that night.
Right, right. So that was good times.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So the documentary, the reason we talked about that, just
right.
Yeah, I have yet to see this, but I remember we talked about it, I think, when it was in production. So I need to go find a copy of that somewhere to watch. All right. Next up.
Lovely bicycle. When do we need a cargo bike? So from building cargo bikes to when exactly do we need one?
Right. Yeah. This is Lovely Bicycles from Boston, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I'll just quote this paragraph here. Now I find myself manufacturing tasks in order to have excuses to ride this cool bike and test its hauling capacity. I should load it up with some Bromptons. Done. Too easy. I should use it to bring home a Festivus tree. I should borrow some neighborhood children. I should take the cats skiing. All this brainstorming makes me aware that I don't, strictly speaking, actually need a cargo bike as part of my daily routine. Quote, don't need a cargo bike, but you're car free. Of course you need a cargo bike. 2 years ago, I would have agreed. There are groceries, the hardware store, photo equipment, art supplies, assembled bikes, large packages. But after all this time, I've adapted to having limited hauling capacity and now only rarely need to transport large or heavy loads. The Radish is a bike I want to need, but in reality would use only occasionally. So this came up, I think, when we had Sean Granton in, because he was talking about the fad of cargo bikes, how they're kind of like the new fixies. And
sort of the SUV of the bike world.
Kind of, yeah. With the notable exception that they're not burning a bunch of fuel.
Well, okay.
So I feel like the issue is weighted slightly differently than the SUV is. But,
oh, certainly.
Yeah. Dave, because you're a part of the Transportland sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to this concept of want versus need on cargo bikes?
I think I find myself in a fairly similar position to Valoria from Lovely Bicycle personally. But again, like I don't have kids. I live close to a lot of stuff. And so I don't generally find myself in need of carrying like 300 pounds of stuff.
Right, right, right.
So for me, like a normal bicycle that's just well equipped to carry stuff is plenty. But again, you know, if I had to carry kids regularly, I mean, the same sort of thing, you know, if you don't have a lot of people in your family or stuff to carry, you know, it's fine to own a Maserati, but if you have four kids, you know, you're not going to get them all in there. You know?
Can't put them in the Maserati.
It's the same sort of, you know, I mean, it just, it's really, just depends on your preferred lifestyle. You know, if you live in such a way that you have stuff to haul a lot, then it's probably worth owning one. But
right. What if you don't need to haul stuff, but you just like hauling stuff?
Well, it's
is that a good enough excuse?
Sure, why not? I mean, if you have the means and the place to put it and, you know, whatever, sure. Why
right,
not?
Right. Yeah, I guess you need a place to store the cargo bike. Like, sure, it has to be big enough for, yeah.
I mean, say,
don't even have a place to store my normal bike. It sits on a bike rack in front of Ken's Artisan Bakery overnight. So.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, I was impressed by that, actually, because we came and visited you and your wife a couple, was it up over a month ago, right?
Yeah.
It's been a while now. But yeah, I was impressed just by, like, you guys are pretty resilient for not having, like, dedicated bike parking or covered bike parking. You're still kind of, like, letting it out, letting it sit there. And
yeah, I mean,
feeling relatively okay about it?
In a sense, I don't really have any other option. It's either that or carry my 50-pound bike up three flights of stairs three times a day, you know, so. Oh, yes.
Right. Yeah.
We have, you know, like around a 700 square foot apartment, so
fairly compact.
Two large bicycles take up most of the living room, you know, so
totally. Yeah, so there's that, definitely. Aaron, what do you think?
Okay.
Does anyone need a cargo bike?
Does anyone need a cargo bike? I'm sure there are people who do. Yeah, I'm maybe sort of on the fringes of this one. I have had to lock up my bike many times, most notably in Hollywood District is usually where I find them. Either the extra cycles or the cargo bikes like are so big that it's hard to lock up near them. And like sometimes they're taking up like the whole rack.
Oh, okay, so this is a space issue then.
It's a space issue sometimes, yes. As far as hauling stuff, you know, you've got like the dude we covered last week in the news who brought all of his stuff from Savi Island.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's cool. Like, yeah, as a utility thing, awesome. As a day-to-day riding to get your groceries, I don't think it's really necessary. But I feel that way about SUVs, too.
Sure. You know, sure.
Like, if I lived on a farm and, you know, had to come into town to, like, grab all my diesel and whatever, mm-hmm. you know, for the farm. Yeah, totally. SUV it. Or pickup truck, even. But since I live in the city, I would own a regular car or bike.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, there's a lot you can haul just on a regular bike with a decent, like you were saying, like a decent rack, that something that is set up for hauling stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there's trailers that you can hang or put away until you need said trailer. So, yeah, we'll probably get I'll probably get a little bit of hate mail for this, but I don't think it's as necessary as we make them to be.
Yeah. Okay. So you can send that hate mail to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. Yeah. Though, again, you know, I mean, thinking about grocery shopping and stuff, like, we grocery shop on, like, a 1 to 2 day basis for two people, you know, if you're doing grocery shopping for 4 or 6 people.
Sure, sure.
That's a whole different story.
Yeah. True enough. I have never seen a cargo bike at Costco, and I don't hang out at Costco all that much, but I haven't seen it.
Though,
have you seen any bikes at all at Costco?
I would like to see a cargo bike go into Costco sometime.
Though the positioning of most Costcos is generally a deterrent to people.
Right, to even biking there.
Yeah,
yeah, that's for sure. Quick poll. Cargo bike or fixie, Aaron?
Oh, like,
if you only if you had to have one or the other.
This is like, which circle of hell do I choose? That's right. I'm just going to rub salt into that wound there.
I'll just poke you with my trident there a little bit.
I would go with cargo. It's got way more uses than a fixie.
All right, there we go. Dave, as a fashion statement?
I would probably say the same.
All right, there we go.
Yeah.
Easy enough. Well, I think we have a solid anti-fixie base on the podcast. Not that we hate kind of, fixies.
I wouldn't just say like, I'm anti-fixie. Right. I just feel like I would get more use out of a cargo bike than a fixie.
Exactly. And we're not anti-fixie here on the Sprocket either.
We try not to be anti-anything.
Yeah. It's just
the guy who just ranted on
the practicality of it all. And I think there's... It's easy to get distracted by things that seem absurd.
Though I just was remembering, I don't know if you've ever seen the gigantic Nyland trikes at Clever Cycles with a huge flat box on the front.
No.
It's like a, I don't know, I want to say maybe like 5 foot long by 3-4 feet wide.
Oh, wow.
Box on the front with, two wheels and one in the back. Hmm. And those things are fixies.
Oh, wait. Oh, we're really? Talking about the, like, they kind of look old school. It's like a truck bed, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
In front. Okay. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. What are they called?
Nyland. It's okay. Dutch. That's kind of actually like the traditional Dutch bokfiets.
Right. And is it downtown? Is it Cafe Velo at the PSU Farmers Market?
Uses one as the platform for
an
their
espresso machine and
cart.
Everything on top of that. Yeah.
Yeah. But it has like this massive drum brake on the back, and it's basically got a motorcycle tire on the back.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's that is amazing.
I would think like a set of gears would be necessary for hauling.
Well,
something.
You have to remember they come from the Netherlands, which is like, you know, riding around Amsterdam, the biggest bump that I came up against was the bridges over the canals.
There you go. Okay. You stand on the bridge and you can see like forever.
Yeah.
Basically.
I mean, Mark, who writes the Amsterdam Eyes blog, moved his entire flat on one of those.
That's pretty impressive.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's a solid, stable rig too. I believe it has like leaf springs, right?
Yeah, it does.
To kind of cushion the load a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's basically like that's a truck, cool. But that's a fixed gear.
He had it loaded up so full that he thought he had blown the tire because it was essentially like compressed to the ground.
That's impressive. So in that case, you could have both. You could have the cake and eat it too, where you'd have the fixed gear cargo bike. So I think that solves our question.
Yeah. Well, so there you go. You need one of those.
Yeah. So, and you can do a track stand on it very easily.
Yeah.
There's no problems.
Infinitely.
Track stand on a trike. It can be done. Well, let's see here. I tell you what, it's about halfway through our program here. Why don't we talk about the crash?
Okay.
And then we'll hit our mailbag. And I think that probably would wrap us up with like enough time.
Yeah. We'll be linking the rest of the headlines on our site.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I'll leave the list. And a lot of those were duplicates from last week. So, stuff we didn't get to. So, yeah. Okay. Dave, hang on a minute here. Let me give you one of these. Dave Foyt from PortlandLives.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
You, sir, were involved in some sort of crash recently. You want to tell us basically what happened, and then we'll kind of extrapolate questions from there.
Yeah, sure. So I was riding home from the South Waterfront. I work at OHSU, so I park down at the valet there and then I ride home to Northwest Portland. So I was riding along the waterfront path close to the Burnside, where the Saturday market, the new setup is.
Yeah.
I was going along, and a guy in front of me the path kind of widens out there. And so I was kind of a little bit to his left, but behind him. And he just kind of started veering across the path ahead of me. So I kind of shouted at him and braked and started turning as well so I wouldn't hit him. And a guy behind me was apparently going way too fast and just plowed right into the back of me.
Oh, wow.
I'd kind of rolled off my bike and scraped up my knuckles a little, but, he just like face planted into the ground. I mean, he had
just the man behind you.
Yeah.
That, broadsided you or
his stem was twisted like 45 degrees from the wheel. His brake lever was bent completely over. He had like some plastic goggle things on and they were just shattered all over the place.
That's intense.
So I think he hit the ground pretty hard.
Yeah, for sure.
He seemed okay. I mean, he was really dazed, of course, when he got up, but he didn't seem like permanently damaged in any way. He had a gash on his face, I think, from the the goggles, but
interesting.
The guy in front of me felt horrible. He, I think he was a newish rider, and he was not sure he was ever going to get on his bike again.
Oh no!
I remember that quote from because you kind of had like a it wasn't live tweeting obviously, but
it was
kind of like a string of tweets after
once
this.
I got home. Yeah.
You're kind of putting out the story in its bare bones there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that, do you think he was serious about not wanting to saddle up again?
He seemed pretty rattled, yeah.
Wow.
Wow. You didn't end up hitting this guy.
No, like I didn't. At least I'm pretty sure not. I wasn't going to for sure. I'm not entirely sure that I didn't bump him a little once the guy hit me, but.
Right.
Because I don't really remember clearly as I was tumbling through space, but
yeah, it all kind of happens very, very quickly.
Yeah,
yeah. So wait, did the third person was also thrown to the ground? Like it was just a big domino effect sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
I think the guy in the front. I mean, I don't think he went down as a result of the crash, but yeah, he. You know, because I yelled at him that because he was, cutting across, I think he felt responsible for causing the whole thing.
Sure. But, yeah. Were you overtaking him or just kind of like?
No, I wasn't. He just kind of started like veering over. I wasn't like trying to pass him.
Right.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. He just kind of happened to move in front of you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And so the guy behind, you say he's going quite a bit faster then.
Yeah.
Like he was kind of anticipating that he would pass both of you?
I think. I mean, I didn't see him before he hit me, so I don't know exactly how fast. But, I mean, given how hard he crashed, it seems like he probably was going pretty fast. And mm-hmm. he couldn't. I mean, he even said once he got up, I'm sorry, I couldn't stop in time, So.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Interesting. And this is all on a kind of a shared multi-use path sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
The waterfront is, well, I mean, these days, not so crowded, but it can get really crowded.
Yeah.
Not just with bikes, but there's I encounter more pedestrians than cyclists.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, one of the really big arguments against shared paths, and it doesn't not really related to this incident, but just that you have a lot of people moving around in very different ways, and
right.
not just people either, people's dogs and whatever.
Dogs, cats, and
sometimes.
Circus clowns.
But, yeah. I mean, people riding bicycles generally going in fairly straight lines, but people on foot just going all over the place, and they might be walking in a straight line and suddenly decide to stop and turn left, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I've done that. I've been that.
Or someone's dog might just, suddenly run across the path or whatever, So
right. Yeah, particularly if the dog is not leashed.
Yeah.
That happens from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what sorts of lessons do you take away from this? Like what's on your mind as far as like there's so many issues. Maybe just like bike-to-bike crashes for one, because you don't hear a whole lot about those.
Yeah.
Usually we're prepared for like collisions with vehicles more than we are collisions with other riders.
Right. Yeah. And I think it probably does happen more often that people collide either with people walking or people driving. But I think it's just a matter of riding appropriately to the circumstances you're in,
Mm-hmm.
There's not necessarily anything wrong with riding fast and hard, but there's times and places where that's not really appropriate. The same with driving, I mean, if you're on the freeway, there's not really a problem with going 60 miles an hour.
Right.
But if you're on a city street, that's probably not a good idea.
And in Oregon, it's known as the basic rule of traffic is that you're not driving or operating your vehicle in a way that is
dangerous
to other people. Like that's why the basic rule is kind of a loose and
right
unspecific rule, but yeah.
Uh-huh. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing necessarily wrong with riding a certain way, but when there's a reasonable probability that that's going to cause you to not be able to control your vehicle, then you probably should think twice about it.
Yeah, sure. For sure. Yeah, and I've thought about that quite a bit because, like, I've been a school bus driver for like 5 years now. And when I first got the job, someone said something about how like it's going to change the way that you drive like your own personal car. And I was like, pshaw, you know, I'm young and brash and I'm going to drive the way I want to. But I found not only like the way that I drove when I used to have a car, but also the way that I bicycle now is very much influenced by like what I've been taught as a school bus driver, because like they're all about like extra space in front of your vehicle so you don't rear end somebody else. Sure. And slow, deliberate movements and all kinds of stuff where, basically like I feel like that's kind of shaped the way that I ride as a bicyclist. And so, being aware of both your capabilities and what you're not capable, like what's outside of your control and how to compensate for that.
Sure. Right. Like, if you're going at a certain speed, you want to compensate for braking distance. Like, if you're not capable of, like, slamming on the brakes if somebody cuts in front of you, you may not want to be... I mean, you've got this choice. You can either slow down or you can find a place where you can cut loose where there's not so many people.
Sure.
Right.
Like Eastern Montana.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really valuable. Whatever you're doing moving around, you know, just to think about, like, if something unexpected happened, would I be able to handle it right now?
Yeah, for sure. At the risk of stigmatizing a certain subset of the bicycling population, this often is a complaint from both sides of the issue on the Springwater Corridor out here, the multi-use path that goes out to Gresham, where people who are out for a Saturday ride as Lycra carbon training guys oftentimes are upset by the fact that someone else is in the path that's moving slower than they are.
Sure.
And people who are moving more slowly are upset that someone is racing past them. And that's a debate that's been happening for a long time.
Oh, certainly.
And probably won't ever go away. I think just due to the nature of it, it's not like we can call the Association of Freds and be like, so you guys need to knock it off because there's not one. But do you have any thoughts on that, Dave?
Well, you know, I think part of it, too, is that's, for the most part, I mean, if you want to, like, train for riding fast, that's about the only way to do it.
Right. Like, I suppose if you're, like, on neighborhood streets...
it doesn't work real well unless you're willing to, like, completely disobey the traffic laws.
Right. I mean, not that that hasn't been known to happen, but yes.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
In general, they're not, like, miles long stretches where you can just kind of bust it out.
Right. Yeah. You know, Marine Drive and the Marine Drive path are a great place for that. I suppose even if you're in a vehicle or like, if you're driving, depending on the time of day, but, Marine Drive doesn't have any stop signs from, it may have no stop signs at all. Mm. It's a good place to go driving fast. A good place to go bicycling fast.
There you go.
But, good to know about, I guess.
Yeah. And I think the deal with the multi-use paths, because I love to cut loose. I love to, you know, go fast. I'm not the fastest person on a bike. I'm really not that fast at all. But I love to, like, just really give myself a workout.
You do like to engage from time to time.
Yeah, yeah. But in the meantime, it's a multi-use path. You have to keep that in mind. There are going to be people that are going to be either slower or faster than you. I think the waterfront is a great example of, like, sort of the multi-use path, like, either
condensed
at its worst or at its best. I don't know, depending on how you look at it. Because you're dealing with all sorts of people all at the same time. I may be coming back from, you know, bike camping and I have all my gear strapped to my bike. That's going to make me a lot wider, you know, than the average guy with his carbon frame, you know, all lycra'd up. And then in the meantime, you know, you have families that are like 3-4 abreast on the waterfront.
Just
you've got to
meandering
just,
along.
Right, right.
Because
it's a nice day in the summer. Portland in the summer is freaking awesome. And I can't really fault them too much for wanting to walk by the waterfront.
Yeah, right. It's a really nice public space when there's not, like, massive parties, and I mean not parties but all the festivals going on in the park, but
that should be differentiated from an actual party,
right?
The other thing that you bump into on Portland's waterfront is those little rental quad bike things. what do you call it? Is it like a Surrey or a...
Who knows?
Because I know in Seaside, Oregon, you've been able to rent those years.
Since I was a kid, I think.
I used to be insanely jealous traveling to Seaside on family vacations as a kid that we couldn't rent one of those and drive it around. But it's basically like a golf cart made out of bicycle parts.
That you pedal around.
Right. So now there are those in Portland, and people are riding them like across the Hawthorne Bridge.
Or the Steel Bridge. And like on the Steel Bridge, it like takes the up the entire path.
Right.
And they're, you know, going like 2 miles an hour.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It's not like Getch. I can't remember the name of the company, the people that rent those. Yeah.
It's one of those things like I really like and I also really hate at the same time. Like I think of, you know, because I work with people who are differentially abled as far as walking or riding a bike. And, you know, I see those and I'm thinking to myself, wow, I could get, you know, one of my guys on here and we could go for a ride along the waterfront or, you know, through downtown. But they're so freaking wide. And so, you know, up and down the waterfront, you could get away with it, maybe. But
right.
Taking them on the bridges, man, there should be, whoever rents these out, they should just say, like, nope, you rent it on this side of the river, you're staying on this side of the river.
See, I've always wanted to rent those and take them somewhere else, like places they don't belong, like out to this neighborhood, for example. Or
take
like
them out to dinner in downtown.
Up to Skyline, yeah, something like that. Just like, you know, somewhere where it's absurdly obvious that they are not designed to be there.
Right.
But maybe someday.
But that's the thing. They're not designed to be there. They're not designed to go across the bridge.
True enough.
Yeah, I've been stuck behind a few of them.
Right.
Much to my
chagrin, dismay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, I guess in the long run, it's really just like a minor inconvenience.
True.
You know, it's not like, I mean, it's kind of the same issue as like having to stop for someone crossing the street, you know, like sure, sometimes it's annoying, but it's like, okay, you get on with it and whatever.
Curse them out, damn pedestrians. Or you can be like, well, they do have the right of way. Yeah. Dave, you seem like a pretty zen guy. Like, I mean, what raises your hackles like on the road?
Abusive behavior.
Okay. Of all kinds?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, you know, or just like blatantly irresponsible behavior, you know?
Sure.
I mean, I was having a discussion on Twitter with a friend the other day about, you know, like say you stop at a four-way stop. You stop first, car to your right, stop second. You start going and they just floor it to get through the intersection past you, you know?
Oh. Right. Because you're going to take forever to get across that intersection.
And, you know, it's just like you could wait 3 seconds or you could risk killing someone.
Right.
And, you know, that's just like, but it just, you know, it doesn't cross people's mind that that's the you know, choice there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Would you say, I'm just thinking of like, the difference between a bicycle accident and a bicycle auto accident. Have you had bicycle auto accident before?
I haven't.
No, luckily so, and good for you. I'm glad you're still here.
Yeah.
You've got a pretty pretty pointed viewpoint on kind of like the place of vehicles and their inherent danger and all that. Motor vehicles, I guess. You want to talk a little bit about that? Just kind of unpacking the place of motor vehicles in society and
meaning the place they have currently or what I would be my ideal.
Both.
Well, you know, I think that motor vehicles are very useful for a sort of niche, you know. I mean, they should be used for hauling large pieces of large loads.
Right.
Or for going really long distances. In the terms of normal daily transportation, I think, one, we should have way better public transportation. That should be like a major social priority.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, I think it's like 40% of all trips in the U.S. are like 3 miles or less or something like that. And for almost any sort of normally healthy person, that's completely feasible for them to move themselves on their own power, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Be it bike, walk, whatever.
Yeah.
Aerial tram.
Yeah, I mean, at least a significant portion of those trips would really should be if the environment facilitated it.
Right. Yeah, and that seems like the infrastructure and the built environment has a lot to do with that. Because like these short trips, it's not like people are maybe necessarily driving because they think it'll be that much more fun, but because walking there sucks.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases.
And just the sort of like cultural attitude as well, because, you know, people tend to drive as if they have the right to all of the space in front of them.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's not even, I mean, riding around Northwest, I don't feel like there's much need for any separated infrastructure, maybe on a couple streets, but just if people would drive as if they honestly have the same right to be there as everyone else and didn't feel the need to threaten people out of the way.
Like, I don't have the right to be here. We have the right to be here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's also, you know, I mean, part of it is, you know, it's not that everyone drives that way, but you never know when you're going to come in contact with that person who does. So it's sort of like this constant tension, you know.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
There's a lot of crazy people out there.
That's what my grandpa tells me that all the time. Yeah. Like, he's talking to me, be like, there's a lot of nuts out there. And it's true.
Well, so, and we've inherited a sort of car culture mentality, too. And for most of us, growing up, it's just the default,
mm-hmm.
you know, go get the groceries, get in the car, go get the groceries, you know, and, go to the post office, get in the car.
And also, you know, to broaden it out again to the bike crash scenario, just a sort of... heightened hurry, you know, like everybody's in a rush to go everywhere.
Right. Like it's not, we're not predisposed to hang out and wait.
Yeah. Or to just like take it easy, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. yeah.
As far as time, like what are we actually saving?
Right. And it's not really much, but there's just this constant pressure of like, you have to get there as fast as possible. And I think, you know, part of it is just the, excuse me.
It's good beer.
It is.
Yeah.
you know, the development spreading out too. And so if you want, you know, that's one thing that's really hit me being in Northwest is like, I can do basically all of my errands for a day in like a half an hour walking.
Uh-huh. And, which is nice.
Which is really nice. And it just sort of changes how you view time because then I have the whole rest of the day to just kind of hang out. So I don't feel any need to like run around as fast as I can to do all my errands because I'm not, you know, traveling over 30 miles to do all of my errands. You know?
As compared to if you're driving a motor vehicle somewhere, and you're like, well, I have to get these jobs done by this point. Otherwise the expressway is going to be clogged.
Or, you know, I have to like, I have to go 3 miles here to the grocery store and then 4 miles over there to do this other thing and then 5 miles over here to the hardware store or whatever, you know.
Right.
It's a totally different kind of mindset. So, yeah. You know, we've pushed ourselves into that thing.
Yeah, well, a lot of it is, you know, this idea of the safety or the security of suburbs, which is like 30, 20 you know, minutes in a car away from things. So when I do, in that mindset, if I were to want to get my groceries, you have to sort of account for that time. And it becomes problematic, I think, when you are sort of married to that kind of culture of, I live out here and it's great and I have my wonderful life out there. And then going to do my errands, it's this stress trigger of like, okay, now I got to do this, and like you're saying, if I don't get it on time, it's going to be, the expressway is going to be clogged at 5.
And it's going to take like 45 minutes to an hour instead of half an hour to get home.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then there's that whole stress of having to sit in traffic and know that, you know, I think you feel sort of viscerally that I could just put my foot down and go 40 miles an hour, but I'm stuck here in this.
Yeah, right.
You know,
that's true.
Which is rarely a problem on bicycles.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I'm curious, Dave, on your input on this. Just talking about patience and impatience on the Hawthorne Bridge. People commute over that every day, both directions. You know, usually in the morning going downtown and in the afternoon going away from downtown. But we have a very interesting situation built there where, like, you have a pedestrian lane and a bike lane, and there's no clear delineation between the two. You've also got a lot of bicyclists that are, like, super, super stoked on getting home really fast. And other people who may not necessarily be either skilled or enjoyed bicycling that fast. Many times when I'm on the Hawthorne Bridge, I feel this urgency to either, like, you know, step up my game or get off the bridge, you know, or get off my bike or something like that. Do you have any thoughts on that situation?
I would say probably the majority of the time that I ride over the bridge, I don't feel too stressed out about it, but I certainly have had moments like that where it's like, I'm going across and there's a pedestrian along the right-hand side by the railing, so I'm going around them and somebody tries to fly by me on the left and I nearly knock them off the path into the...
Oh, yeah.
Into the... traffic, because there's only like inches of space there, you know.
Right. I mean, and the vehicle lane is separated by a vertical grade curve. Drop down. Yeah.
And but it's not actually metal not grading. Separated. It's not
right. Basically, you're always at danger on the Hawthorne Bridge of kind of like veering into the lane of traffic in which you would have no control.
Right.
You have like a, I don't know, is that a foot drop even? Like,
maybe not quite, but it's...
It's pretty significant.
I feel like 6 inches, but it feels like a foot.
Maybe, just because, the metal grating and...
You can see through it, and it's,
Right, then there's the river below.
Yeah.
Pardon me a moment.
But that's another situation where I think it's fitting to just sort of, like, ease off a little, because there are a lot of things that could happen, and the potential risk of getting knocked off into the automobile traffic on the metal grating...
Right.
Is, worth just kind of backing off a little.
Yeah, that's kind of problematic. I'm sure we can all agree that passing on the right is kind of like a bad idea as well.
Generally, yeah.
But I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me. Not on the Hawthorne Bridge, but just like someone like clears you on the right.
Yeah.
At an intersection, for example. And you're not expecting that, which is kind of, I feel like it's in poor taste, but that's just me.
Yeah.
It's also illegal. so there's that. Anything else you want to offer before we wrap up as far as just like lessons taken away from this crash that you had?
Not unless you have other questions.
Yeah. You said you busted a couple knuckles. You're pretty much healed and set by now.
Yeah, you can still see a little small,
there we go. when we take our picture, you'll have to put your... Yeah.
That's right.
There we go.
Sure.
We'll give you some knuckle tattoos.
That was about it. I bruised up my elbow a bit, but
there
would
we go.
You say that's the worst crash you've been in so far?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the other crashes I've had have been one solo crash where I hit. They're up at OHSU, coming down from the main hospital.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
These like expansion joints in the road, and they just recently replaced them with smoother ones. But they were essentially kind of like streetcar tracks.
Oh wow.
I hit one of those once and my wheel just went, because it's going around
dang.
A turn as well. So it was rainy, and they're slippery. So I just, the wheel went out and I,
onto the ground.
Thankfully I wasn't going fast. So it wasn't really, I did actually bend my crank at that point, but they're steel. So they clever just bent it back again.
Yeah.
It was fine. But, the other time, I was actually coming down Terwilliger from OHSU, which there's bike lane on either side and then one lane of automobile traffic going
each way. It's a
beautiful
ride.
And the thing is in the afternoons, a lot of times traffic backs up all the way from the bottom of the hill up the hill.
Okay.
and so there was a bus stuck like halfway up the hill, and I'm coming down the bike lane to the right of the bus, and the bus decided to let someone off the middle of the... And he jumped out of the bus like a foot in front of me in the bike lane, and so I just smacked right into him.
Wow.
Intense. Again, I wasn't going terribly fast, but,
You're coming down a hill, though.
Yeah.
You got some momentum going.
Yeah.
It's kind of freaky.
Neither of us were really hurt badly, I don't think, but he felt really bad about it. He was like, I'm so sorry, are you okay?
Yeah.
So I don't think he'll probably do that again.
Okay,
but,
easy enough.
The only other time I basically like fell over not moving in front of my apartment because I was pulling up onto the sidewalk and hit some moss and just kind of like fell over sideways.
Right. But that's a less exciting story, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why we save it for last.
Uh-huh.
Well, we're glad you're still okay. Glad
yeah.
you're here.
Yeah.
Aaron, crash story?
Crash story. Just last October. It wasn't anything as dramatic or even really that significant. I did screw up my shoulder pretty badly, though.
Enough to be off the bike for like a month, right?
Yeah, for about a month. Couldn't support my weight on my arms.
Beesh.
On my right arm. Like, never went to the doctor about it, so maybe it would have healed a little faster if I had.
Sure.
But it was the first big rain of the season. So, like, all of the oil and everything that had been built up over the summer, you know, is finally, like, surfaced up on the water that's collected on the road. Just coming home from work. Can't remember the name of the road. It's just north of the East Point Center.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Where the Walmart is down here.
There's your problem.
Yeah. So I'm going around this curve, and I have a tendency to take curves faster than I should anyway.
That's exciting. So
it is. It's very exciting.
Why not,
like,
right?
Like getting up off the bike or off my saddle and like leaning the bike. So the bike is like one way and my body or my torso is pointed another way.
Right.
I don't know. There's just something cool about it. Maybe I was like a motorcycle racer in a previous life or something. But anyhow, so it's rainy. I was going too fast. I'm going around this curve and the bike just slides out right from underneath me. And I land on my side, cracked my helmet.
Wow.
It's pretty bad. Got up and like, yeah, the bars are all turned around.
I
had to, you know, spin that back and turn the brakes or the brake levers, you know, back to where they're supposed to be. And
you're knocking things out of position.
Yeah. Everything was kind of all askew at that point.
Right. But you made it out okay.
I made it out okay. And in fact, like nothing was scraped up. I was expected like my coat to be torn up or, you know, like even just from the impact, like some sort of bruising or anything.
Right.
Never got a bruise to develop at all.
That's all right. So congratulations.
Yeah. I've had less intense wipeouts where like a bruise would show up eventually.
Yeah.
This didn't happen anyway.
I did put a hole in my pants because my keys in my pocket.
Oh, yeah.
Ripped a hole in my pants.
Okay. Were they repairable or did you have to get rid of them?
I don't know yet, actually. I haven't gotten around to taking them in.
Easy enough.
Yeah.
Gotta find a good tailor.
Yep.
We should do the mail bag segment.
Mail.
While we're doing that, while you're looking it up,
got it.
I'll just say that the worst thing that I've ever had happen to me on a bike, I think, is probably my left turn from Vancouver to Tillamook, riding a new bike. It had the suicide lever brakes. It was an old Schwinn.
Yeah, yeah.
And they weren't set up the way that my previous Schwinn had been. So I was used to braking with the suicide levers and it working. This time didn't work. I slammed my right knee into the corner of it was like a Mini or something like that, a tiny little car.
Ooh. Okay.
And at 50 miles an hour, I couldn't walk for days.
You probably hurt the Mini more than your knee.
Probably so. Yeah, I'd like to think so. So, hey, how about...
You've got mail.
Show. Listener Ryan has been having difficulties with Apple's new podcast app and our show, as have many others.
Yeah, seriously.
Our take? Apple is effed.
Yeah, fuck Apple. Yeah. I'm done with them. I'm not done with them. I have all their products.
Yeah, I'm reading this on an iPod too.
Precisely. Yeah, so we haven't figured out why that is. Hopefully, I mean, I've got our webmaster looking into it.
Okay.
Yeah, but I would say, you know, tell Apple to get with their game.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Come on, help a brother out.
Yeah.
David writes from Fred Meyer's headquarters to address our displeasure with their bike racks. I read this email before I came over.
Yeah.
I was really pleased and also a little embarrassed.
How crazy is that, right?
Yeah. If you send me photos for ammunition, I'll be sure to harass our planning department about this. Smiley. If I recall correctly, they try to remodel each store every 10 years or about. I'm guessing these stores are due.
Yeah.
So awesome. Thank you, David. That's in response to last week's segment.
My bike won't fit here. Or whatever.
That's,
yeah.
That's a good. Yeah,
and
a good
honestly, music. Your mention of trying to park next to cargo bikes, I think a lot of times that's sort of exacerbated by the fact that the bike parking is kind of crappy in the first place.
True.
Right. True. Right. Yeah. That happens.
Yeah, I often wonder with many of these. I don't have any to rant on this week, listeners. So
you're off the hook.
You dodge a bullet this time. but yeah, I often wonder if people who put these in like actually put a bike up there
right.
to test them, or even if they ride bikes.
I feel like they probably don't have access to one.
Yeah, we should also extend that invitation to Whole Foods, because like the one on Laurelhurst, the bike parking there. I mean. There's like a little sheltered corral thing, but the racks are like extremely high. They're big, fat, square.
Oh,
racks.
I hate square bike racks.
And what's up with
they
that?
Have like bars coming down from the thing into the rack. So if you park on the far side of it, you have to like reach around through the thing to lock your bike up. And it's just really obnoxious.
Yeah.
Okay. So then
one of those things where obviously like whoever designed this bike rack probably has never actually used it to lock a bike to.
Right. So we have one this year, this week as well.
We should get pictures of that.
Seriously.
All right. And while we're on that subject, listeners, send in your photos.
That's it.
I would love to rant on those a little
bit. TheSprocketPodcast@gmail.com.
So lastly, Darren Alf from BicycleTouringPro.com announces the launch of his sister site, GoBicycleTouring.com. And he's giving away, or they are, giving away free touring packages in a contest as part of their site launch.
Yeah.
And that graphic would not load, but
that's
I was
okay.
looking over at yours.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a couple different tour packages that he's offering as prizes. These are self-guided tours, but that's really the way that you probably want them anyways if you like to go bicycle touring. But he's offering one in the Czech Republic, which is the best of South Bohemia bike tour. Prize includes pickup, lodging, buffet, breakfast, and bike rental. Spain, which is a 7-day self-guided bike tour, 6 nights of lodging and breakfasts. And Switzerland, which is a 4-day self-guided with 3 nights of lodging, bicycle rental, and return by train. So, yeah, he's been making some connections with some touring companies while he's been doing his tour over there. And,
nice.
Yeah, I would say hop on this. You know, enter the contest.
Yeah, I totally
want
to do it.
Yeah.
Which one? Which one would you take, Brock?
Oh, gosh. Well, the Spain tour is the longest one. That's 7 days.
And, yeah.
Although Czech Republic sounds interesting, too, because as I understand, I have a trace amount of Bohemian ancestry myself.
I have a friend, actually a guy who used to work at Clever Cycles in town, who is living in Poland now.
Is that right?
And he's said that they've done some bicycle touring in the Czech Republic and really enjoyed it.
Nice. That sounds like fun. Yeah, and so much of that area is like kind of like the Northwest too, right? Like trees and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean like
trees.
The climate is somewhat different, but yeah, there's some similarity.
Yeah, yeah. So hop on that. Well, hey, this is the end of the show. We should probably close ourselves
this
out.
This is the end. Upcoming shows beforehand.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. On the 23rd, we will rebroadcast Humanity on Wheels #2, Transit Storytelling. On the 30th, stories from 10 years of breakfast on the bridges in Portland. And then on the 13th, Sonia and Mike from Bike Punk.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll be fun. I'll start that over for you.
Oh, that's all right. Anyways. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Write us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com, or call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. Thanks for Hurtbird for providing our headline sounders. Find them at hurtbirdmusic.com.
All right, see you later. Oh, that's crazy stuff. Look at polyrhythms and stuff. I think I may have hit the button twice.
Oh, I think it's still playing the old one that you started.
Oh, wow.
And then when you restarted it.
That's intense.
That is kind of cool, though.
All right. We'll see you next week.
It's like row, row, row your boat, you know?